Parents have been warned about letting their kids online pretty much since the creation of the internet. Take a listen to a clip of Good Morning America from 6 years ago.
Now to our series, What Your Kids Don't Want You to Know. And this morning, we are taking on a danger you may not even realize exists. Your kids can be at risk playing those video games in your own home.
Imagine, even in your own home, your child is in his room by himself playing a video game. You still have to be worried because they're not really in there alone. Because of online gaming now, the whole world is in that room with them.
A lot has changed since then, and some hasn't, including a pandemic that has required us to adapt and find spaces online for social connection. So, where do we stand now? And how should we be thinking about that way, the way our kids use the internet and social media? That's all part of our focus for this month's edition of Be Well. And so here with me in Studio 2 to help us break it all down is David Bickham. He's the head researcher for the Digital Wellness Lab at Boston Children's Hospital. He's an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Bickham, welcome to Radio Boston. So good to have you in the studio with us.
Thank you so much. It's really a joy to be here.
I know you study the connections between social media, youth and adolescent mental health, well-being. So let's start there by defining what social media is. What do you mean when you say social media? Is it more than just Facebook and Twitter?
Yeah, this is an excellent question. I mean, I think that communication, adolescent communication online is happening in lots of spaces. And really, it's that connection that matters more than necessarily any specific type of format. So when we talk about, you know, the typical meaning of social media are these sites like Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram that allow for posting of images and sharing information. But really, like, there are so many tools out there that allow for this connection, which is what, you know, what draws adolescents to it, because they're so avid about wanting to connect with their peers.
So we could be talking about video games, things that are virtual reality, maybe. We're including a really growing body of what is considered social media.
Absolutely. You know, and really even thinking about the platforms isn't necessarily going to help you understand the potential impact, because it's not a single experience. No matter what you're doing, you may have something really positive happen to you when you're interacting with your friends, people you know. It may be really a supportive experience, or it might be something where someone's harassing you or being mean to you or leaving you out or isolating you in some way.
So you're actually going into the question I wanted to ask you, which is you differentiate between those positive and negative interactions. I would love, like, specific examples, if you have any, of first what a positive interaction looks like.
Sure. I mean, I think we know that social connections are a major protective factor against mental health problems. And that can translate to the digital space. It can be a place where young people connect with their friends, they maintain and develop relationships, and they can get that social support. They can reach out when they need help. Their friends are always online also. It's really a way to connect and relate to each other. On the other hand, you know, there's and it's important to think about the extremes. Like, there are extreme experiences that we as adults often call cyberbullying, which is when young people are mean to each other, you know, and they isolate each other or they harass each other. And we know that going through that is associated with many problematic outcomes, including increased suicidal ideation. So the thoughts of suicide. So there can be really significant negative impacts, and there's the potential for positive connection as well.
We're getting to the idea that this is a tool you can do with as you wish, because it is a tool, so you can use it however which way you choose. But your personal goal, your goal is to maximize healthy use of social media, whereas I would imagine a social company is motivated, and I'm not imagining this, I mean, there's been well-documented resistance from companies to designing platforms that maximize healthy interactions. So, you know, Meta is one example. There have been whistleblower reports about how Meta, you know, even though they found out, like, a lot of their use is not healthy among adolescents and children, they still kept going. So I want to know, in your opinion, will that change as long as there's a profit motive?
Yeah, I mean, there's there, you've laid out some really good evidence, and there's excessive profit motive, and there's some research actually showing the extent of that profit that's available for that comes from young users. But I think they, I think there's a parallel pressure from growing from families, from young people, from policymakers, and that that pressure can help steer these platforms towards more positive use or more positive design aspects. I also, you know, each of these companies have a trust and safety department, and the people that work in those departments care a lot about the users. Like, they are really there to try to make sure the users has a positive experience. So the fact that they're there and that, you know, we talk to them a lot, and that's our typically our entry point. We, those are the folks that, that we tend to talk to. Yeah.
I should note here for transparency's sake that your lab does get funding from some of these companies, Meta and TikTok. And I just want to emphasize one thing you said is that there is pressure. They're facing pressure. So it sounds to me that maybe the profit motive is changing a little bit. Like, just from your interactions with these companies, what are you hearing?
Yeah, there's definitely recognition of that pressure. And there's, you know, they want to simultaneously, you know, maintain relevance and turn a profit. And I think that so they have internal folks and they work with folks like us. I mean, we're one of many groups that, that they go to for advice and ideas about how can we maximize the health and well-being of our users.
Let's play some sound from Chamath Palihapitiya. That's a former Facebook executive, and he talked about the impact social media is having on our society in this moment. And this is him speaking at a Stanford Graduate School of Business event back in 2017.
The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution. You know, my solution is I just don't use these tools anymore.
So I play that to ask you this. When parents just say, no more, that's it. It's all or nothing, baby. Like, I'm just going to take these tools away from my children. Do you think that's a good idea? Just according to science, according to research, how do you feel about just nixing social media from your diet?
I mean, I think especially for adolescents, it's really difficult because of that developmentally appropriate desire to connect with your peers. And so if they know it's happening and they're not engaged with it, that's really harmful. It's hurtful for them. It's difficult for them to handle. So I would say, you know, a better approach maybe, well, let's look at some ways, especially when they're younger, you know, and as they're entering this space, like, let's look at some ways that we can identify some platforms and ways to communicate with your friends that that we think are the sort of safest and best kind of entry points. And then build skills from there and look for, build critical thinking skills and build skills around who do you friend and when and why and how do you remain an intentional user and choose content that you choose rather than letting, you know, an algorithm choose for you? Like, what these kind of skills and dialogue and discussions parents can have with their children to help them be healthier, better users.
I have to be very honest with you. As I'm listening to you say this, I feel overwhelmed. As a parent myself, I have a toddler who is, you know, 2 years old, but still, like, this is, I remember when I was talking to one parent and she had three girls entering teenagehood. And I look at her, and I'm like, do you got any advice for me? Just lighthearted. And she turns to me without missing a beat and says, the hardest part by far is maintaining, like, just digital, you know, like their cell phones. She just said it's their mobile phones, their cell phones. And I'm already seeing that. I'm not totally anti-screen. I know some parents are for their toddlers, but I am already worried about how do I raise my kid? How do I form healthy digital habits? Like, where can I start if I'm a parent of a young kid? What would you advise me?
I mean, I think modeling is number one. So what that does is it sets household norms and expectations. So what you're doing is you're showing your child, like, what does it mean? What is life with media like? And so if you're expecting down the line for, you know, your 14-year-old to want to have dinner with you without their phone, you know, like, when your child's young, demonstrate what that looks like and set that as a norm. You know, if you want to have, we want to charge our phones in a room that's not our bedroom. You know, we want to have it outside so that it doesn't interrupt our sleep. So do that and show them this is the way we deal with devices in our house. And then it becomes, you know, I use the word norm because it becomes what they see as normative and their family's way of handling it. And that alone, I think, will set you up for having positive behaviors with the devices.
Work on thyself first. It's always like a parenting mantra. It's such a spiritual exercise, and I understand that you have to model those habits in order to see them. But let's talk about go back to your research a little bit. Are there specific risk factors that you've identified that make certain types of youths or adolescents more susceptible to negative reactions from social media?
I mean, there are definitely, well, we know that there are marginalized groups that make young people more likely to be the recipient of bullying or aggression. LGBTQ, any neural development issues, all of these things put kids at risk for that. What I study a lot is what we call problematic interactive media use, which is sort of what other people might call internet addiction. And we are learning about what are the characteristics in the family environment that put your kid at risk for really having negative experiences with use, such that you can't, it has a direct impact on your daily functioning and you can't balance it with the other kinds of activities you want to be doing. And some of those things include underlying self-regulation abilities, so a diagnosed or undiagnosed attention deficit, as well as life events that may steer you towards online, an existing anxiety and depression, all of these put you at higher risk for that kind of use.
Mm. And so say a parent is really struggling, not with their toddler, as I asked you before, but maybe with a teenager or a young person who is very clearly struggling, or maybe social media is not having a great impact on them and it's very apparent. I mean, can you even control that, to be perfectly honest? Or is it just, it is what it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I think there are some really helpful online tools that allow you to create a family media plan. And what that looks like is a conversation with your child about, like, what are your goals? Why do you use it? What are you trying to do? How can we sort of meet those needs for you, allow you to use it in a way that meets those needs, but also get the other work done in your life. You know, that is it schoolwork? Is it social work? Like, what can we do to try to work with you to get those done? Because that dialogue is critical, because adolescents will push against rules that impose upon them, and they won't be super effective.
Can I ask you about the pandemic? It's you know, I wait till the end of our conversation to bring up a big topic, but I do want to know if there has been a shift in your research and your thinking about how you're approaching your analysis of social media and its role in our lives.
Yeah, so we've done a number of studies sort of like at the meat of the pandemic and then beyond that as well. And some of the things we've seen was, not surprising and seen in other research, its use went way up during the pandemic. This is not surprising. But what might be more surprising is it has not come down. And we're sort of like, are we dealing with what's normal now with these high levels of use? And to some extent, I think we sort of figured out, well, look, we can work from home. I can do schoolwork from home.
Yeah.
Like, I can connect with my distant family members on, you know, so
we're going to be having this conversation in the metaverse soon.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm convinced.
Absolutely,
yes.
We will. Yeah. And so, so there's a high level of use, but during the pandemic, that use was accompanied by lots of mental health problems, big impact in eating disorder issues went way up during the pandemic. And a lot of those were came at the same time as this big uptick in use. So it's difficult to kind of tease them apart, but certainly changed how we interact with screens and sort of our motivations behind doing that because of the tools available.
So whereas years ago that maybe we were talking about how to get it out of our lives, but at this point we should probably be talking about how do we adapt.
I think
and
so.
Learn and live with it
right.
in a healthy way.
Yeah, live with it in a healthy way and really also encourage the industry to create platforms that can lead to that health and beneficial lifestyle.
Well, David Bickham, he's the lead researcher for the Digital Wellness Lab at Boston Children's Hospital and assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. It was so lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here.
You too. Thank you so much.